AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by Full Scale from Helena. Help soybeans reach their full yield potential with an efficient foliar blend of plant extracts and micronutrients from Full Scale. AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN Smart Nitrogen. Learn more about the industry's environmentally smart nitrogen at smartnitrogen.com. Soybean meal is extending an incredible move to the upside. That's pulling soybeans along, but wheat, corn, cattle, they are all struggling this morning. One thing that is not struggling, exports of meat. We'll learn more about that and get an update from Machinery Pete.
Live from the weekly opening ceremonies Ag Extravaganza via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Then it's on to Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Right after the news, a weather update from Carkins. Bam, WX, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
Davis Michelson, welcome back, brother.
Hey, How are you, man? Doing great. Doing really good.
Good, good. Glad to hear that so much. Yes. What a way to get things started this week. You know, there was a brief time where I had the thought, and this was months ago, where I was thinking to myself, you know, is doing something with Machinery Pete once a week, you know, to kick things off, should we really be? And now I just cannot wait to get the updates from Greg on what is going on in this used machinery market.
I remember that internal conversation. I remember that internal conversation in our shared brain, and it kept me up for weeks.
Right.
I was like, this guy needs to just stop thinking about this. It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer, and we're using brain on this.
Yeah, so really looking forward to the conversation with Greg coming up here in a little bit at the bottom of the hour this morning, because we're going to make room first to talk with Dan Hallstrom from the U.S. Meat Export Federation. They just wrapped up their strategic planning, had their officer elections last week, and the summary looks really exciting. Some of the reports coming out of the meeting, where their focus is, how they're going to maintain momentum in some of the markets that are really bringing value to U.S. hog and U.S. beef producers, poultry producers as well. It's really an exciting time in the export markets for meat. We've talked about that before, but let's find out why. How is this momentum building as rapidly as it is? And then we'll make a trip down to South America and take a look at what's going on down there with the weather with Kirk Hinz coming up here in just a little bit. Let's go ahead and get started. What you got, Davis?
Well, Chip, the 6.2% year-over-year surge in consumer prices during October marked the fifth straight month that the consumer price index exceeded 5% and signaled the largest jump in consumer price inflation since July 1982, Chip. Concerns over rampant inflation dragged the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index down to its lowest level in a decade in early November. Separately, 4.4 million American workers quit their jobs in September. That's the highest number since records began. Yeah. Now, National Economic Council Director Brian Deese on Sunday pointed to the Democrats' social spending package as a solution to rising inflation in the United States. Chip, that's an interesting take.
Yeah, it certainly is. I don't know how dumping that much money into the economy is going to slow down inflation, but I know that they're talking about lowering the cost for consumers on medical, on prescription drugs, on childcare, on several things. But just lowering the cost doesn't mean that inflation slows down, because those providing those services,
right,
actually have as much, if not more, money as before. So I don't know if this is going to slow down inflation or not.
Well, Chip, President Biden has hit a new approval low in a Washington Post ABC News poll. Republicans enjoy their largest midterm lead over Democrats in the 40-year history of the poll. The poll was conducted after the passage of the bipartisan infrastructure package. 51% of registered voters say that if midterms were held today, they'd vote for the GOP candidate in their district. 41% say the Democrat, marking the biggest GOP lead the poll has recorded since 1981. Interestingly, 70% of respondents rated the economy as not so good or even poor, Chip.
Right. And the important thing there is that this poll was taken after passage of the infrastructure package, which it's that's one of the items that was that was blamed for the Democrats' loss in the governor race in Virginia.
Chinese leader Xi Jinping and President Biden will meet in a virtual summit this evening with the goal of stopping the bilateral relationship from worsening. Taiwan and China's economic practices are set to be discussed. And according to Janet Yellen, lifting tariffs on China is off the table.
Okay.
U.S. ag groups are noting frustration that EPA recently did not use, quote, the best available science and data as is required by law in its endangered species biological evaluations for glyphosate, atrazine, and simazine released November 12. As a result, EPA's final evaluations for these chemistries significantly inflate the number of species and habitats found likely to be adversely affected. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval expressed criticism of the evaluations. And Chip, the climate summit held in Glasgow, Scotland, dubbed COP26, has drawn to a close. As in other climate summits, late in the confab, India tempered language on reducing coal emissions. Yeah. Meanwhile, the U.S. backed off signing commitments to end coal use by 2030 and to phase out gas and diesel-powered cars. The final communique, most admit, did not go far or fast enough to reach pre-meeting goals. Still, participants said the outcomes were better than nothing and provided incremental progress. And quickly, this will make you excited, Chip. According to the Washington Post, the European Commission has added locusts to its list of foods authorized for sale in the EU. The insects will be considered a novel food, sold frozen, dried, and powdered. Chip.
Excellent. Excellent. The good news is there that I'm going to leave that protein source for everybody else to consume.
Abstaining, are we?
I am. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate that. Let's get Kirk Hins in here from BAMWX.com. How are you, Kirk?
I'm doing awesome, Chip. How are you guys?
And I'm doing just fine. We've got some developing dryness down in southern Brazil, eh?
Yeah. We're definitely starting to see the effects of the La Nina and deepening La Nina, I should say, starting to settle in areas, especially of southern Brazil, Uruguay, eastern Argentina, southern Paraguay. That is starting to see some developing dryness in there. More importantly, we're starting to see the weather models kind of grasp that idea of hanging on for the next at least 4, 6, maybe even longer weeks ahead. So as we're going into our next month of December, I think those areas specifically, southern Brazil, Uruguay, southern Paraguay, and eastern Argentina, especially those major cropland areas, will see a lot more developing dryness. And honestly, it shows some similarities out there to 2017 and 2018, which if a lot of people remember, there was definitely a lot of dryness that developed in that same area. So it's a lot of similarities, and I think that's a good year to compare to as we go forward.
Kirk, can we watch Argentina for the signals first?
Yeah, I would. I would watch Uruguay into Argentina. The data continues to trend drier as it rolls forward in those areas. Yeah. Again, we're not on like a major deficit currently. It's more like as we're going into December and into the new year, which is the, very similar to what happened in 17 and 18. So definitely things to watch as we move forward.
Right. Okay, gotcha. And here in the States, really kind of a quiet forecast, just we've got those colder temperatures coming in.
Yeah. We're definitely going to be lacking in precipitation, which is good for those wrapping up harvests. Definitely some colder shots in there as well. But yeah, I would definitely say nothing substantial for precipitation next 2 weeks.
Good work, Kirk. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you, man.
Awesome. Yeah, likewise. You guys have a great week.
All right. That's Kirk Hins, BAMWX.com. Okay. When we come back, we are going to get a report from the big meeting that took place for USMEF late last week. Dan Hallstrom, right here on AgriTalk.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's November 23rd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis is back.
Yes, sir.
Him standing by.
Standing by.
You bet. Hey, Davis, late last week, the U.S. Meat Export Federation held their strategic planning conference and had their board of directors meeting, and we're going to hear all about it right now and some of the plans for the USMEF from Dan Hallstrom. Dan is the president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Dan, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Chip. Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
You bet. Absolutely. How'd you enjoy that weather down in Southern California?
Well, the weather actually was pretty nice. Can't complain about that. But the environment around the meeting was electric, getting everyone a couple of things. It was our 45th anniversary, and it was the first time in 2 years we've gotten our membership together in person for our board meeting. So a lot of excitement.
Yeah, fantastic. Mark Swanson is the new U.S. Meat Export Federation chair. I would imagine you're excited about working with Mark from Burco Corp.
Oh, without a doubt. Mark is our new chair that was installed on the last day of the meeting last week. And Mark and I go way back. We worked together years ago in the ConAgra days. So it's good to be back together working with such a strong supporter of our industry.
Well, and you've got a really strong officer team when you take a look at that. Dean Meyer is the chair-elect. You've got Randy Spronk on the officer team. And now Steve Hansen, a rancher from Elise, Nebraska, is the newest member on that officer team. Really strong right there, Dan. You got to be happy.
Yeah, very, very good group. Indicative of our membership, a very diversified group, beef, pork, agribusiness, and leader in the grains industry all together.
Right.
So we're excited.
Yeah, should be. Very good. You know, there was a lot to celebrate with U.S. meat exports over the past year, but let's talk about one of the areas where it's got the greatest momentum, it feels like, Dan, and that's in South Korea. The office has been open in South Korea now for how long?
Well, it was our 30th anniversary of our office in Korea. So, yeah, just and also we're looking at record growth there. So, yeah, there's a lot of positives around the Korean market, as you know.
Yeah. How did that happen? What's been the real key to building that market up as much as it has, Dan?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Number one is persistence. I mean, we've been invested in that market for 30 years. The industry's been invested for longer. By nature, the culture is very much meat eaters. But we've had a kind of a rocky go of it. If you remember when BSE hit in 2003, that market for 3 or 4 years was at an all-time low in terms of trust and the willingness to invest in U.S. Beef in particular. And we've clawed our way back and regained that trust and regained that that confidence in U.S. beef and U.S. pork, and at the same time has been growing as well. And there's this little thing called the Corus Trade Agreement, which was monumental. I mean, you have to have access to grow the business. So it's a combination of having a trade agreement that was very positive for the U.S. combined with investing a lot of dollars in the market over time. And look what we have today. We have it'll be a $2 billion market this year for U.S. beef. no one would have thought we'd be anywhere close to that if you look back 10 years ago.
No, absolutely not. And boy, I hear you when you say that one of the keys here is getting on an equal footing with competitors into that Korean market, into the Japanese market. There's been other trade progress made that's giving U.S. meats more opportunity in Asia, right?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. We've got the Japan-U.S. Ag Agreement, which was implemented January of 2020. There's a lot of positives. And, of course, if you swing back over to this hemisphere or over to this area, you've got the USMCA, or NAFTA 2.0, as I like to call it, which has really solidified and got us in a level playing field in North America.
Right, right. You know, that Asian market, Dan, we're always told how much it is relationship-driven. How important is it that you've had the same director in place for more than 20 years in that South Korean office?
Well, I think that sort of stability is always positive, but it really goes deeper than that. Our whole staff, I mean, and it goes for all our offices all over the world. I mean, we have these offices have databases and relationships set up over the years. And you know what happens with that. And actually, I shouldn't even say years, over decades.
Yeah.
And that trust factor is just, it's no different than doing business in the U.S. If you're a producer selling hogs or cattle, you're going to deal with people that you trust. It's the same thing in these markets, even maybe more so in the Asian culture. So very, very important, as you point out.
Right, right. The pandemic, COVID pandemic, it changed the way that Asian consumers dine, similarly to what it did here in the U.S., but there seems like there's even more resistance to going back to restaurants in Asia. Is that the right read?
Well, it is the right read. The difference is that you look at Japan and Korea, for example, our two largest markets value-wise. They had just exited their fifth wave of COVID back about a month ago in the second week of October. Okay. So really from April to October, they were in another shutdown wave where restaurants were open, but they were had to be closed. There was only a certain amount of people allowed, and they closed by 8 p.m. And in the case of Japan, no alcohol was served at all. Now, anyone that's been in Japan to imagine a restaurant without alcohol is almost unbelievable. it's one of those deals where, they've adapted. Maybe partly because they wanted to, but probably more so because they had to. And so what we're seeing is, and Korea is a really, really good example. We've seen these e-commerce platforms absolutely boom. Drive for home delivery, for online ordering and online pickup. What other options are there from traditional in-restaurant dining? And we've seen a lot of these options pop up over time.
Interesting, interesting. The shipping chaos that we are dealing with, Dan, has that created many issues for U.S. beef and pork and making their way overseas?
Yes. In fact, this is probably the biggest topic of our meeting last week. I spent quite a bit of time on it in my own speech on the opening session, and we had a panel on it on Thursday as well for a couple of hours. It's been this isn't a new issue. This issue has been building since late last year. We started really seeing evidence of it in the first quarter of this year, 2021. And I would say in the last 3 to 6 months, finally, the rest of the U.S. is listening and waking up to the fact that we have a real issue here. So business is being affected. That's number one. Originally, it was affecting us just, I would say, on the fringes, frozen bookings, frozen beef, frozen pork being delayed a week or two is how it started. The exporters scrambled and got things handled. But over time, when I say over time, since early 2021 until now, it's steadily gotten worse. The backups are worse. The congestion is worse. The delays in waiting for containers to be loaded and offloaded has gotten worse. And now we're looking at not only frozen beef and pork being affected, and it's not 1 or 2 weeks, it's 5 or 6 or 7 now. And now it's spilling over into the chilled pork and beef cargo, which is really, that's where it really hits the pocketbook, because our biggest push as an industry are these chilled value-added, higher-value programs that are all based around chilled, all based around arriving and just-in-time delivery to major retailers like a Costco, like a Sam's Club, like a like an E-Mart in Korea. This is what's at risk. Our reliability as a, or our reputation as a reliable supplier.
Right.
If we can't deliver these chilled products week in and week out, that's a problem.
Okay. We're going to continue to monitor that situation, Dan. No question about it. We'll get back to you and get some updates as time goes on. Dan, thank you so much for making time for us.
Of course. My pleasure.
All right. That's Dan Hallstrom, President and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Machine Repeats next.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Man, we've got some of these markets in the grain trade, oilseed trade, going in opposite directions in a big way. Let's start with the markets that are moving to the upside. Soybean meal and soybeans. Brian Grady, Pro Farmer editor, what's going on there?
Well, it's the soy meal market, much like it was on Friday. So there's concerns on lysine supplies, and that would push more demand to the soybean meal in feed rations. So that's the big mover, you know, and meal had been the dog or the lagger in the soy complex, and that isn't the case. We're seeing short covering in a big way over the past couple days in particular, and that's definitely supporting the soybean market here mid-morning.
Absolutely. But boy, you get beyond that, we've got pressure on soybean oil. We've got some heavy pressure on spring wheat, and corn's even trading to the downside.
Yeah, so the soy oil's a big spread unwinding with the meal market there, obviously. Yep. And then you mentioned the spring wheat, just heavy losses there. Early morning trade, you know, we traded just moderately lower early on, but boy, sell stops have been hit and sharply extended those losses. That's impacting the winter wheat markets, but we do have SRW contracts still trying to hang on above unchanged, and then spilling over to the corn market as well and putting a little bit of pressure on corn.
All right. It's been mixed trade in the livestock.
Yeah, you know, pretty quiet, to be honest with you, although it's been back and forth. Live cattle are currently favoring the upside, as are feeder cattle, and so is the lean hog market. But it's been two-sided trade, but like I said, overall, it's been relatively quiet in the livestock markets to open up the week here.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, Brian, keep us up to speed all week. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady right here on Markets Now.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with us.
Standing by.
It's Monday morning. It's a little bit delayed. We had to bump you to the bottom of the hour today, Greg. Appreciate your patience, but let's get to it. Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Chip. How you doing?
I'm doing real fine, real fine. Okay. This one is really interesting. The pick of the week, this is crazy to me. Let's get into it.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine how it could be, but our friends at Mecum had their big 3-day sale this past Thursday through Saturday. Moved the location over to East Moline, Illinois, and I know a lot of our friends were at the sale. Hard to pick out one item to talk about when there's so much cool stuff they're selling, but that 1978 International 986 tractor with only 35 actual hours on it, which now I don't know the backstory on it. I wish I could have been at the auction, but I wasn't there. But I did have my friend Alan Hoskins with American Farm Mortgage shooting video for me. So we posted a video of it selling, and it went for $50,000. That was the hammer price. Then you tack on the buyer's fee, $52,500, which of course is a record on an International 986, you know, as you'd expect with 35 hours, my goodness. But interesting to note, the previous high that I'd ever seen at auction on a 986 was $23,750 back 13 and a half years ago on a sale in Unionville, Missouri. So 52.5, I think that had him talking on Saturday.
I would imagine. Well, 35 hours on a 1978 tractor gets you talking. You know, that Mecum sale down there, it's got to be just like, It's sitting in a parade without having to sit outside, and you can the most comfortable situation ever for these guys.
Well, it is, and it's turned into kind of a family reunion. People from all over the not just the country but the world show up to the Mecum collector sales in the spring and fall. And again, to see these unusual things. I did have someone comment on the Facebook thread when I posted about it that said that it was their neighbor's tractor. So I don't know why it only had 35 hours on it, but occasionally these rare gems show up for sale, and it's always interesting to see what they bring.
Absolutely, absolutely. What else caught your eye there?
Again, so many things. There was another record set, if we stay on the red side of things, 1965 Farmall 1206 Narrow Front, completely restored 2 years ago. That brought $54,600. Of course, we don't know how much money was spent on the restoration, but, 54.6, the plain fact is that's the highest 1206 I've ever seen sold. Some interesting items, Chip, on the sale. You drift back into those 100-plus-year-old tractors, which are kind of interesting. There was an Altman Taylor 3060 that went for $189,000. 1918 Case 2040 restored, went for $73,500. Another interesting one and a record was a John Deere 62, which I think we had just talked about one couple weeks ago that popped up and sold for like $44,000. This one had been restored, went for $84,000, which was $28,000 over the previous high I'd ever seen from 11 and a half years ago. There was also a 1932 Keck Gonerman 3060 from, it came originally out of Southern Indiana, that went for $115,000. And then if you drift into that 1970s, 80s range, Mecum is starting to get more of those tractors. Yeah. And pretty interesting here, the two highest auction prices I've ever seen on John Deere 4230s, both were Saturday or Friday, I think. They were both low profile, very unusual. One was a Power Shift, about 4,000 hours, completely restored. That went for $64,050. And then they had a 75 model low profile Synchro range, completely restored for $52,500. So, yeah, it was a fun 3 days there in East Moline, I think.
You know, I hope you'll agree with me on this, but I don't know if I like the collector status rolling into the 70s models or not.
It's dating us, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, it's no good. That is no good.
Hey, time is speeding up, buddy. We're not much we can do about it.
That's right. That's right. And there were some more 70s collectors that sold out of Maryland.
Yeah, Saturday in Maryland, individual had a collector sale. Martin's Auction Service had the sale, and the one that just popped was a 1973 International 1468. Of course, our friends, these V8 tractors that were duds kind of when they came out, but now they're hotter than a pistol the last 10, 12 years. But this 1468 had 4,481 hours on it, went for $54,500. Second highest auction price ever on a 1468. The only higher one was just this past spring, end of March. A Mecum had a 74 model front wheel assist that brought 63,000, kind of a rare bird. So, yeah, Maryland is continuing to produce some high prices on good tractors out there.
Sure is. Sure is. Okay, let's get a little later model and get some working units out there. What have you got from that big sale up in North Dakota.
Yeah, good friends at the Steffes Group last Tuesday had an online farm auction for Gerald and Mary Beth Orne in Wimbledon, North Dakota. Really strong prices, beautiful equipment. 2011 John Deere 9330 four-wheel drive, 1,578 hours, went for $194,000. That's the fifth highest auction price ever on a 9330, but the highest in 7 years. And if you just isolate down to the U.S., it's the highest auction price in 9 years. Okay. They also had a 2011 John Deere 9770 STS combine, just over 2,000 engine hours, went for $144,000, highest auction price this year, Chip. And then an air drill, a 2011 John Deere 1890 42 foot with a 1910 cart, went for $128,000. So again, really good condition, used equipment, ton of demand for this stuff and strong prices there.
Right, right. Okay. Greg, last week you talked about an auction that was going to feature a ton of Magnums. Was there any details on that?
Yeah, that was last Tuesday. It was down in Belgrade, Florida.
Yeah.
Jeff Martin Auctioneers, a great auction company, had that sale. It was for a dealer down there, and I think they had, 50 Magnums, which, it's challenging when you sell that many. And as I look through the prices, and by the way, folks, just go to machinerypete.com. If you want to see, I think there were 41 2017 model Magnum 250s.
Yeah.
So just go click on the auction price link. But as I look through, I mean, considering you got that many items, I mean, they held in there pretty well. It is a little interesting given that that's Florida, which, it's just a different market down here. You get into that sugar cane down there. But and I'm a Minnesota boy. What do I know about sugar cane and equipment? But it is fun to see the prices on those. So, that was an unusual sale for sure.
Okay. All right. You know what? I might have broken into your chain of thought there on that sale up in North Dakota. Did you cover everything up there that you wanted to get covered?
Yeah, I think that was it there. I would say the next day, Steffes had a sale. We talked about it last week, but it was in New Hartford, Iowa, a little farmer sale. A couple more records were set. I posted a YouTube video of it, but they had a 2012 John Deere 7230R with 11 hours on it, a Gold Key tractor. That went for $179,000. Broke a record that Steffes had set back 6.5 years ago. And they set another record on the 2013 6125R Deer, had 4 hours on it with the loader. That went for $124,000. The record from over 6 years ago was $106,000 with the loader. So again, very unusual there. They were bought for tax purposes with those low hours and just shedded. But again, selling for just premium prices.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not only the fact that we continue to see some record prices. It's the fact that we are seeing the highest prices in the last 7 years, the highest prices in the last 9 years.
Yeah.
That's
like that 7810 last week in Maryland for $170,000, seeing a record by $32,400. I mean, we're starting, that's not that unusual anymore. It's kind of spooky actually, but that's what the market is right now.
All right. What you got coming up this week?
Well, this week, if we look back to our friends at the Steffes Group, check their website out, folks, steffesgroup.com. 6 land sales and a pair of machinery sales. A nice one on Wednesday for Thomas Strand, his online retirement auction out of Purley, Minnesota. If you like red tractors, folks, they got a 97 Case H 8920 mechanical front, 5,600 and some hours. 2013 Magnum 290, I think that could be really hot. It's got 1,547 hours. And a nice 2010 Steiger 435 four-wheel drive, 3,200 hours. And then keep an eye out, folks. We have our own sale coming up, our Machine Repeat online auction, Tuesday, November 23rd. If you're looking for a nice smaller combine, 2019 Case H 6150. It's got that retro look to it. Only 335 SEP hours coming out of Farmer City, Illinois. Beautiful combine there. It's an absolute sale, November 23rd. And how about this for a semi, Chip? We got a 2011 Kenworth T800, 29,121 actual miles out of St. Edward, Nebraska, from Quality Trucks and Trailers there, the good folks. Very unusual truck. So it's selling absolute Tuesday, November 23rd, Machine Repeat monthly online auction.
With the level of concern about getting a truck like that
right,
and having a truck like that in the future, that could be a really hot item.
Yeah, it's they don't, you know, it's a rare opportunity. The market's tighter than tight, and here's a like new, you know, 10-year-old semi, and let the beginning let the bidding begin.
Right, exactly. You know, and conversations over the past week about the availability of not just semis but pickup trucks.
Right,
Greg, it's going to be a hot item on auctions going forward.
Oh,
there's just no question.
It is. I did a piece for Ag Day about a week ago on a chip, and I know we saw the highest auction price ever on a Ford F-350 at $68,000. I think it was a 20 model, low miles, 5,700 miles. But yeah, good used pickups. If they're in good condition, low miles, crazy. They are just crazy hot right now.
Good stuff, buddy. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, sounds good, Chip.
All right, that is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson. Happy to be back with you on this Monday morning. Thanks for tuning in. Chip Flory, standing by. It's your turn to stand by a little bit, just for a second.
All right. Okay.
All right. You may have noticed I was out last week, a couple days, took a couple sick days. And the reason, my voice, you know, I know that our beloved listeners demand solid gold radio, right?
That's right.
And I just was not in a position to deliver that the last 2 days. I mean, if you listened last week, you probably noted the declination, the decline of my vocal function, you know, and by the time we hit the afternoon show on Wednesday last week, it wasn't solid gold at all. It was something like recycled organic aluminum, maybe mixed with like some dirt.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't worry, everybody. I'm fine. I'm fine. Excellent. Happy to be back. So happy to be back. Let's start at the very top of the show. Mm-hmm. Deepening La Nina, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah, and pay attention to what is going on down in Argentina. That, I think, is going to be our first signal that I'm going to pay closest attention to anyway, that it'll give us the best odds of telling us just how severe conditions might turn. And a lot of times what happens in a year like this is it starts down in the south and it just kind of creeps to the north. So we need to watch that very closely. Yeah.
Dan Hellstrom, after that conversation, I've got an awful lot of confidence in the U.S. Meat Export Federation, particularly when he was talking about the Korean, those Asian markets, and what a great handle they have on the value of those longer-term relationships.
Right. They've got a proven strategy. I think that's the most important thing, Davis, and that's my take on it. Some may have a different take on it, but when we're talking about it, what is going to be a $2 billion beef business into South Korea in the year ahead, that's significant. That Japan, the amount of beef business that we've gotten back since 2003 when that BSE cow was found on Christmas Eve, it's very impressive the way that we have built those markets back and the momentum that is in place. As long as the shipping issues if we can get those out of the way, Davis, then I think we can maintain the momentum. But the shipping problems are a threat to the momentum.
Well, and it was interesting that he referenced specifically the just-in-time type supplies, the chilled meat,
right?
How that just-in-time delivery is so crucial.
And he mentioned something that I think is so important. What it is it's a threat to the reputation and reliability of the U.S. as an exporter and supplier.
Yes.
I talk about that so well. I haven't had to recently, but when we talk about tariffs, when we talk about restrictions of any kind, when we talk about sometimes growing a short crop, like we did in 2012, and the impact that it had on the reliability of the U.S. as a supplier of corn and soybeans around the world, and the long-term impact that that had in building it back. So important to maintain that reliability as an exporter. Yeah.
As an economic indicator, machinery repeats numbers on some of those restored tractors.
Yeah, I don't know.
I found
what
it just
means.
Absolutely shocking. How are people comfortable paying that for something like that's a restored tractor? I mean, they're collectors. I get that.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
they
he's talking 73 grand, over 100,000 for one.
Right.
You know.
In many cases, there's got to be an emotional connection to that particular model, to that particular year, to that particular serial number, perhaps. Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was the very first tractor that dad had on the farm, something like that.
Right.
But, some of the prices on it, absolutely just crazy.
We reported in the news earlier this morning about the GOP looking pretty good at the coming into the midterm elections. It's early yet.
Right.
But it seems like we've had conversations about the tendency for party flip-flops.
Oh, yeah.
From one election season to the next. But interesting to note here, Senator Pat Leahy says he's not going to be running for re-election.
Right. Democrat from Vermont. As I'm looking at this, he is in his eighth term, will not be seeking a ninth. He's been serving in the chamber since 1975. As I understand it, he's the longest sitting senator. It's just crazy to think that he's been in the Senate since 1975. Big impact on... potentially a big impact on dairy policy in the farm bill. Senator Leahy has been unbelievably influential in dairy policy in the past farm bills. You know what? In every farm bill. I can't even believe I just said that. But yeah. And so it will be interesting to see which senator steps up and lays claim to that influence. Okay. So something to watch. A couple of other things that we talked about that we didn't get a chance to talk about, Senator Leahy not running this morning in DC Signal to Noise with Jim Wiesmeyer, but we did talk about the signing of the bipartisan infrastructure framework bill, the BIF bill that's supposed to happen this afternoon. And President Biden and President Xi Jinping are going to have a virtual meeting. Talked about that. I've seen they're downplaying expectations for this. They're downplaying expectations and saying, listen, don't expect any major announcements. Don't expect any major happenings to result from this meeting. It's almost a get together and I guess kind of a let's shake hands and get reacquainted type
let's
of thing.
Let's get the conversation going. Yeah.
That's right.
I can get behind
that's
that. Right. I can get behind that.
Well, we're going to do that this afternoon at 2:06 Central, too, Davis.
I can't wait. So, I can hardly
wait
at all.
Can't wait. Matt Campbell from StoneX will be our guest this afternoon, 2:06 Central, right here, AgriTalk.